in this world of COVID-19. There's so many questions, and today we have an expert, Dr. Caxton O'Pare. He's a board-certified internist, emergency medicine physician, and the world's leading authority on the medical complications of divorce. He's published 15 books, and his two most recent ones are COVID-19 Remedies and COVID-19 Physician Treatment Strategies. Caxton, it's nice to have you on the program again.
Oh, no, the pleasure is mine. Thanks for having me, Dr. Wayne.
Okay, so I can go back and look at the archive programs and see about one that we did with you months ago on divorce. That was a good program. But let's talk about COVID-19 now. Why did you decide you wanted to write about it?
Well, I'm a frontline physician. I see a lot of patients, and I know one day soon, as soon as it hit China and it began to spread, that it will hit my emergency room, which it did hit. And so I knew I had to prepare, and I've always trusted the CDC to provide information. I couldn't find anything, and I looked around, research papers and stuff like that. I couldn't find much. Then I realized that some of my patients were coming with upper respiratory infections, and with that, they needed antibiotics. Some of them won't show up, and the reason they were not showing up was because they were using remedies. So when I heard a patient say, well, I wanted to come, but I took some ginger, took some ridiculous things that for us as doctors made absolutely no sense. So I said, wait a minute. I know this patient's a seeker, but they're getting well on things that don't make sense. I began to research, and I found that those remedies that they were using, I made a list of them. They actually have a very well-grounded scientific basis for helping patients with viral infections. I didn't find anything to help me from the CDC. And when the COVID-19 hit the shores of America, hydroxychloroquine was already being used in other countries, and no one mentioned that either. And then I waited and waited and couldn't find any information at the CDC. Up till 4 days ago, there was nothing that was on the CDC website that could help me really precisely and quickly know what to do to help patients or inform them of what they needed to do as a physician who knows what to do. So that's when I decided I was going to write the first book, COVID-19 Remedies. And that book has remedies there going from hot peppers to eucalyptus oil, menthol. And I'm not a quack. I'm a board-certified internist. I know exactly what I'm talking about when I'm talking about treating patients with illnesses. I'm an emergency physician. I've done that for about 30 years. And so I know exactly what I'm talking about here, Dr. Anderson. Remedies, traditional remedies, some of them have such potent antiviral effects that it's unbelievable how helpful they could be in the fight against COVID-19, and there's no such information by the CDC. And then the day that I decided to write this book, it was one particular moment on the television. I don't watch TV at all, really. I just watch movies. But that day, my wife said, turn on the TV, let's hear something. And I heard the U.S. Surgeon General, Adams, Vice Admiral Adams, say some things, and he added by saying, whatever you know works, do it. And I could see his frustration because he had been learning about some things that work. I am sure, as a physician, that he's not seeing the CDC pull their weight. So I said, I'm going to write this first book. I'm going to write the book, COVID-19 Remedies.
Can you kind of list them? There was about 10, wasn't there, that you had in there?
Eight of them.
Eight.
Yes. I mentioned peppers. I mentioned ginger. I mentioned lemon peel. But the book is free. When Amazon blocked that book, Dr. Anderson, I was upset because I had healthcare professionals, respiratory therapists, nurses in the ICU that worked with me. They got sick, that used as remedies, and they got better. I had a physical therapist who runs a clinic and old people there who got sick, COVID-19 infection, and they used the remedies. They it got better. Some of them sent me letters, emails, long emails, thanking me for the book. And when I put the book on Amazon, they refused the book. They blocked the book. I said, what? This is almost an issue of national security. People are dying, and you don't want to publish a book that helps them? What's going on here? Well, I decided 2 days after that, 48 hours, called an IT guy and said, please put this book on my website. And I'm not even going to charge a dime for it. It's going to be free until the day I decide no more free, when enough people have the book. So I just put it there, and it's been there since, I think, April, sometime in April, up till today. It's free on that website.
So is it available now, or have you taken it down?
Oh, no, it's still available now. It's still available. I want to make sure that people around the world, and people have been downloading all over the world, that they can download the book. They can arm themselves with some information. And the reason is simple. If you have information, you can make decisions. And if you can make those decisions, you're not going to be scared every time someone sneezes around you. Because if they sneeze, even if they infect you, you'll know those remedies will work. And you can halt the multiplication or replication of the virus in your body by doing some specific things and killing it with some of those remedies. But 8 different remedies, and I think they're very effective. Scientifically, they've been proven time and time again to have some antiviral, antibacterial, and anti-inflammatory effects.
Jackson, did I remember when I looked at your book that chicken soup was one of them?
Well, it's hot chicken soup. I call it Nigerian pepper soup. So people take the chicken soup as a broth. The warmth, the heat, coming from the broth as you sip it or drink it helps with the mucus that you produce, so you can cough up and spit out the mucus. And as you know, once you're infected with that virus and it's in your airway passages, the virus is loaded in the mucus itself. So taking the hot soup moistens that mucus, enabling you to cough it up and spit it out, which is important. The other part is what we call Nigerian pepper soup. It's got a lot of hot peppers in it, which have capsaicin. And capsaicin has got antiviral, anti-inflammatory, and antibacterial qualities. So by taking really hot peppers, when you're in North Carolina, North Carolina has one of the hottest peppers on the planet, I think. Am I correct?
I don't know. I can't eat them.
So. And so taking the hot peppers, it's almost like a magic bullet. And talking as an internist to say that, Dr. Wynn, I really am serious. I've had the flu attack me a couple of times, and each time I just call my wife and say, make that pepper soup for me. I need it. And that's all I take. And a lot of people have testified to that. But it's not because we're quacks or it's something that doesn't work. It's something that's in journals. And I quoted maybe one or two journals because it's meant a book meant for ordinary people. So one or two journal references to show that peppers, hot peppers, are very helpful if you have a viral infection. And COVID is not exempt from being attacked and neutralized or even killed, so to say, by taking those remedies, including that hot pepper. So it's not just soup, but hot pepper soup. Cayenne pepper.
Jackson, tell our listeners how they can get that book, what your website is.
Right, Dr. Ensign. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hello?
Well, we just had a little malfunction on the telephone, but we're back on the air. Can you hear me okay, Caxton?
Yes, I can. I
okay. Yes. So, we were talking about your book, COVID-19 Remedies, and would you give us the URL, the website, where they go to get that book for free?
Yes. They go to, just remember my name, Caxton, C-A-X-T-O-N. So if you go to drcaxton.com, spell out the doctor. So you've got 12 letters you got to type in. DrCaxton.com. once you land at the website, scroll down. As soon as you start scrolling down, a pop-up box comes up. Boom. Tells you to subscribe. Put in your email, subscribe, and it'll send the email, send the book, a PDF book, straight to your email. And just check in a few minutes. And don't do it too many times, because at some point it might block you off. That's what the IT guy told me. He'll block off some people because they don't realize that the book is not, it's going to go to their email, not to their phone directly, immediately. It will have been sent to their emails. So check your email in about 5 minutes after you do that, sometimes even instantly, almost. Because I had some doctors tell me, hey, I got it right away. While they were, I'm in the ER, some doctors calling me from downstairs saying, can you send me the book? I heard about it. I need it. So, drcaxton.com.
Okay.
When you go there.
Right. Now, Caxton, I don't know the answer to this question. I got a suspicion, but I'm going to ask you, what exactly is it that kills people that have COVID-19?
It's a chemical reaction, what you can call an immunological reaction. In other words, the virus is not a big, bad, strangle you to death kind of virus. But when it enters your body, it triggers a reaction. It actually uses your body's ability to fight foreign material or bacteria or viruses to kill you. And that reaction is called a cytokine storm. In other words, the cytokines are chemicals that cause or trigger or make inflammation worse. Trigger it, and that inflammation is supposed to protect you and seal off bacteria and kill them, seal off viruses and kill them. But the COVID-19 virus triggers such an awful amount of that inflammation in the lungs and in the rest of the body, we call it a cytokine storm. Cytokine release syndrome is another word for it. And that chemical reaction or immunological reaction is triggered as a chemistry process. That's what kills people, because that chemical reaction allows your lungs to be flooded with proteins and leaks and doesn't allow you to breathe. Oxygen is not able to pass through the amount of fluid that builds up in the lungs. And that's what's called ARDS. And that's what kills people. As a result of the reaction that takes place.
Has that anything to do with what we're hearing about the inflammatory type reaction in kids that they're discovering?
Yes. Yes. That's what cytokines do. They create inflammation, and they make the body respond with an inflammatory response. Overwhelmingly, most people can use that to help themselves. But with COVID-19, it creates such an avalanche of that reaction, it becomes a disadvantage.
Too much of a good thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Has the CDC served our healthcare professionals well?
You know, as a doctor for over 30 years, and someone who's been in the United States in the medical field for about 27 of those years, I would say no. When you visit the CDC website, you know, as a healthcare professional, you want to get information that helps you so you can be confident that even though we don't have a cure or a treatment, we still have some steps that we're taking, we have some things that we're doing, we understand the disease this much. But the CDC has not given us that kind of information. As a matter of fact, when you go there, I went there about a couple of days ago, and it was pathetic. I think the place looks like it was written by a janitor who speaks good English, not by doctors. Sorry.
Why is that?
You know, it's hard for me to figure out why. But it seems that we're at the mercy of a group of people that we don't know would ever be at their mercy today. From what I hear on the news and everything, every now I listen, I watch, and I don't like what I'm sensing about this whole thing. Because information, it seems, about the disease process is being withheld from doctors. That's my opinion. And I'm entitled to that opinion because for about 3-4 months now, there's nothing on that CDC website that will give the average physician who is busy and needs quick information to understand that disease. That information piece or package is not there. And I can't explain why. I don't think that the people writing it are really good clinicians or that they care about doctors or about the people that are dying. That's my opinion, candidly.
Have you heard or seen videos about various conspiracy theories about COVID-19? You know, it's pretty unusual in many different respects, and
yeah,
heard all kinds of things that people have said that might be the cause of why they're not concerned that much about people dying.
You know, that's possible. I've seen some of this, but if this is a conspiracy-based thing, it's so well-crafted. Believe me, there's at least, I call them little fires. They're like decoys. Each fire has a purpose. And they've lit like maybe 10 to 12 conspiracy-type fires that it's going to be hard for you to pin it all down. You'll be an absolute genius to be able to link all the 12 different fires together. For example, the Harvard professor that was, you know, arrested, that he got some money from China. But these same people at the NIH were giving money to the Wuhan laboratories to progress with creating or what? Experimenting with a deadly virus. We hear about the other CCP army Chinese guy that was arrested for carrying biological material. Is he carrying it from America or from China? It's not clear. And then you hear about the bat lady, you know, Xi Zhengli, and there are a whole host of other things. And you hear about Bill Gates at one. You hear all kinds of things. And I think all of this, they may be meaningful to a master tactician or strategist or a group of such people. As a chess player, I know it's possible that all of these tiny little fires are created by one person so that the whole world will be confused about what's going on while they advance their course. That's my opinion.
Well, it certainly is confusing. Are there any currently approved drugs for using on COVID-19?
Well, you know, the word approved, I'll say approved under an emergency use. In other words, before the FDA approves a drug, they do randomized control, placebo-controlled double-blinded trials. There are no such things yet. But there are two drugs, three really, the hydroxychloroquine, sulfate, chloroquine, phosphate, as well as the newer remdesivir. Those are the three. They have been approved for use during this emergency period of a pandemic. But to really approve a drug requires that it had undergone a rigorous clinical trial for a number of good reasons, which is safety for the people and to know that the drug really works, which is efficacy. So right now we have hydroxychloroquine, and I'm a fan of hydroxychloroquine for good reasons. It's cheap, and we have been using it for decades. So we know its safety profile. We know about its side effects. Remdesivir, I'm not sure. Chloroquine phosphate, it requires higher doses for chloroquine phosphate compared to hydroxychloroquine in one of the studies done in China. So we know that at a lower dose, even though chloroquine phosphate is effective, you need more of it to get the same effect in clearing the virus in the body. And hydroxychloroquine has been shown to reduce the symptoms and to clear the virus. So I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be pushing for that at this point, except there's a monetary gain. It's a very cheap drug, so pharmaceutical companies are not going to make a lot of money from it. I think that may be the problem with hydroxychloroquine.
I heard from a Texas physician who was treating her patients off-label with hydroxychloroquine, and I think it was zithromycin. Have you heard this combination?
Oh, yes. That's the first combination drug that was used in France by Dr. Didier Raoult. Dr. Didier Raoult is the one that leaked out the information about the utility of chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, and they got excellent results. Now, we know that hydroxychloroquine can cause arrhythmias. We also know that azithromycin can cause arrhythmias. It prolongs something in the electrical activity of the heart, or the QT. So combining them maybe requires that you put a patient where you can get an EKG done every day. But yes, those two combinations have been shown to be quite effective in the first pilot study done in France. And some people are using the combination, and they're getting good results.
Well, any licensed physician can use those drugs off-label to treat COVID-19 if they choose to do so. Is that right?
Absolutely. I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe so.
And what do you think about the fact that the president is taking hydroxychloroquine?
I think, you know, most people don't. Their hatred of him is why they are blinded to the reality of what's going on. The man got the information. He's not a doctor. He's doing fantastic as far as this epidemic is concerned, or pandemic is concerned. I think he's doing a fantastic job. And the fact that he's telling the world, I take hydroxychloroquine, that should make people think. But people have to be objective and put their politics aside and agree. Hydroxychloroquine has specific immune modulating effects. The virus kills by making your immune system go hyperactive, supersonic active. Hydroxychloroquine prevents that from happening. There's a clear mechanism by which hydroxychloroquine works. And for that, I'm in favor of it. And I don't want my patients to die. So it's a great thing that he's even telling the world that he's doing it. If any of those other people get sick, they might take chloroquine, but they may hide the fact that they're taking it from the rest of the world because they're anti-Trump. That's their problem, not mine.
Okay. What is your critique of the World Health Organization? Can you critique them for me?
Oh, wow. First of all, there is a University of Southampton study that showed that the WHO not only did a disservice, but they calculated their disservice in numbers. In other words, what they found is if the WHO, out of the 6 weeks that they wasted before telling the whole world, if they could have done back just 3 weeks out of that six, in other words, give us 3 weeks back, 95% of the people that died will not have died. So you can see, and I like numbers. I like to use them to give me an idea of what I'm doing. And the WHO did a total disservice. As you can see, they're now fighting Madagascar. And why are you fighting people who are using a remedy that works for them? Instead of trying to find out what they're doing, in that WHO perspective, they waited so long. They knew China was having an epidemic, and they kept hiding and hiding. Even as of January 14, they put out a tweet saying COVID-19 is not transferred from humans to other humans. How dare they? And I think that they did a total disservice to the human race, to the entire world, if you ask me.
I understood from a news report that China is having a secondary outbreak. What have you heard?
Last night, I was about tired going to bed when I saw that. I couldn't sleep again. I said, no, I need to explain this to myself. You see, that's the same reason that people suspect that you may not be able to make a vaccine for this coronavirus, this SARS-CoV-2 virus. What may be happening has a scientific basis. You know, when you inject or inoculate somebody with a coronavirus, they may develop antibodies. But those antibodies may not protect. As a matter of fact, the coronavirus attaches to what's called a type 2 pneumocytes in the lung. Now, when you develop antibodies, the antibodies now become a receptor, not for killing or arresting the virus, but they now become additional receptors in your body through which the virus can attach and still get into your cells. So you have antibodies, yeah, we can measure them, but you can get reinfected, and you might even have a worse reaction, a worser cytokine storm than if you were never infected or if you never had antibodies in the first place. It's called antibiotic-derived enhancement, ADE. And I mentioned that in my second book here so the doctors can be aware of it. It can make the second infection worse. Just because you had it the first time does not make you immune to a second infection and a second cytokine storm.
I just thought of something back a little while back. I got some information that zinc could inhibit the coronavirus from getting in through your pharynx to infect you. Have you heard about the potential for sucking on a zinc lozenger before you go out in public where you might be exposed?
I heard about that. One of my nurses in the ER at work said she went looking for zinc. She's a very smart lady. And she's been a nurse about 40-something years. She said, I went looking for zinc, and I couldn't find any. This is insane, dog. I said, oh, geez, slow down. So I know zinc might possibly be an inhibitor. Well, like I said, Dr. Wynn, at the beginning, these are things that CDC should be telling people, putting on the website, so that we as doctors can say, look, we don't have a cure now, but if you can get 220 milligrams of zinc, you know, things like that show that they are pro-life, pro-health, and that they don't want people to die, but they're seemingly so mute. That information is out there. It's not been studied greatly, but it's probably in the process. And you never know. Sometimes I look for studies and I find that, wow, in 2003, this has been here. 1999, this has been here. You know, for example, cytokines in ARDS. So there's a lot of information out there, Dr. Anderson. And one of them is there are so many remedies. Even though this is a disease that kills like mercilessly, there are so many remedies that singularly or in concert, in combination, can prevent a lot of people from really getting sick. And the CDC, I still hold responsible.
Texan, your volume has dropped off. Can you speak a little louder for me?
So what I'm saying is there is a lot of information, there are a lot of remedies out there that can be very, very helpful. Zinc can inhibit. We don't have, you know, what they say, we don't have all the proof. But if it works, anything works, use it. As long as it's not toxic, as long as its advantages far outweigh any danger to you, do it. And then later on, we'll pull our studies together and find out, what did you use? You survived. What did she use? She survived. And then we start working on an approach to find out in the future what we need to not use and what we can use. But that kind of information is not available, and it should be, because we are at war. This is a pandemic, you know, and I think all the pieces of information should be put together. And even if you put a disclaimer there, we are the CDC. We don't agree that this cures, but some people have found out that A, B, C, and D might work. Put the disclaimer there, but let people have an idea that some things could help them or save them from getting sick or dying.
Yeah. Do you have any tips or anything that you would like the healthcare professionals that are on the front lines to know about?
Oh, yes. Number one, I hate to self-promote, but if I was a physician in the United States with all the charts and all the classifications in my book, COVID-19 Physician Treatment Strategies, I would say get it, because I've read so much in those last 3 months, and I can't find one singular book or thing by itself that puts everything together. So I would say learn, number one, how to classify patients. You can create your own, or you can use the one I have in the book. But there are three things you must do. Number one, if you're a physician, a healthcare provider in the front lines, you must risk stratify your patient when they appear. And what do I mean by risk stratify? There are three risks that you need to be aware of. the number one risk is the risk of exposure. So you classify a person and say, hey, what's your risk of exposure? Environmentally, geographically, if you're from China, Wuhan, and you're knocking on my door, I'll say, no, you can't come in. That's the geographical exposure. So you classify a person based on their risk of exposure, environmental, geographical, or occupational. Number two, classify people based on deterioration. Are they likely to collapse right in front of you in a few hours, or are they fine, perfectly fine, based on vital signs and a history? And then the third risk is risk of death. You must do that at triage. Immediately you set eyes on a patient, you must make that risk assessment. Then you stratify the patient based on their need for immediate treatment or delayed treatment. You do that based on the oxygen levels, and I've classified oxygen levels differently from the way most other people have classified it in the book. The point there is some patients are not looking sick right now. You need to treat them. Don't wait till they get sick, because by the time they get sick, then you increase their risk of dying about 30, 40%, or even more higher than that. So risk stratify the patient, determine their need for treatment, delayed or immediate. If some people look perfectly fine, you can wait for the COVID result. If they don't look fine, but they're not at risk of deteriorating, still start treating them. The EUA that the government gave says start treating hospitalized patients. But I guarantee you, once a person is hospitalized, their risk of dying goes up to about 60-70%. And that's not supposed to be the case.
Well, hospital's a dangerous place. Most people die in a hospital.
Thank you. Yes. So the EUAs, which is the emergency use authorization given for hydroxychloroquine, chloroquine, and remdesivir, were based on treating only hospitalized patients. And that's not right. Again, if you ask me, I think that's not the proper way to treat a person that could die, who doesn't even need to be hospitalized if they were treated immediately.
Okay. I know that you have something to say about the director of the CDC, Robert Redfield. What can you tell us about your thoughts?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I don't know whether his hands are tied politically, but he seems to be in a stranglehold. And I'd ask him, if I met him, Dr. Redfield, why isn't there any useful information on the CDC website for healthcare professionals? And I'd ask him, which of your janitors actually wrote this nonsense that you call treatment guidelines? Because if you go to the guidelines on treatment, there's nothing there. It's a disgrace to a practicing physician or practicing physicians everywhere around the world, because the CDC that we've known is an awesome place to go get information, even on emerging infections. But I'll say, why this? I'd really need to ask you that, Dr. Redfield. Why this amount or lack of information? And the second is, who are the people writing these things that have been published from the CDC website? Because it doesn't look to me like they're practicing physicians who take care of patients who have to announce to families that they just lost a loved one who was perfectly healthy weeks ago. Why don't we have proper information that's useful, applicable, and meaningful to practicing doctors? That's what I'd ask you.
Well, you certainly got a couple of questions that need to be answered, but given the situation in the country, I don't think they're going to get answered.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. At this point, you know, I've seen doctors, respected, brilliant doctors, that people are asking them to come and give a talk or a video clip. People are requesting, Doc, you're an infectious disease specialist. Why don't you do a video clip and, you know, it will help us. Put that on the internet. And when you'll be surprised, these doctors are putting videos on how to wear a mask. A janitor can do that. But you know where it came from? The CDC is not giving the experts, the doctors, information that they can use. So the doctors trying to get a hold of, you know, some control of information to dissipate to others are now demonstrating how to wear a mask. For goodness sake. I blame the CDC for that. I mean, an infectious disease guy should be telling me, hey, Dr. Perry, we have a cytokine storm causing this disease. So if you have patients on rheumatoid arthritis, some of the patients on prednisone or systemic steroids, you may find out that even though they're COVID-19 positive, they're not getting real sick. Please register those patients in a database and send their data to us so we can examine them and be able to make some, retrospective analysis of your data, and do that for practices or hospitals around the world. We'll get some information. But again, that's not happening. And that's what bothers me the most.
You just talked about face masks, and I see half the people wear them, half the people don't wear them. Some of them wear them all the time, some of them part of the time. The face masks look different. They're made out of different material and everything. Could you give us your opinion on face masks?
You know, there are several aspects of face masks. First of all, the person who's infected, we all agree that that person needs to wear a face mask. But I want to classify that one step further. If the person who is infected is going to be wearing a face mask, I'm hoping that they're getting treated with something that can clear the virus. And the reason is simple. If they're wearing a mask, and let's say they're not taking any medicines, they're rebreathing the virus in particles each time they take a deep breath in and out. So that may be 12 to 18 or 20 breaths per minute of re-inoculation compared to somebody who's got the infection, who's outside in their backyard, breathing, but not rebreathing the same virus particles that they just breathed out. So you're re-inoculating yourself. Maybe that's why Anthony Fauci wanted to tell people, you know, the face mask thing is, you know, but it's individualized. So it may protect you from spreading the infection to others, but when you're in a place where you're not likely to pass infection to others, please, even if you're taking any treatment, try to take off your mask. Go to your backyard where you're not going to infect anybody else. Sit out there and take some fresh air to dilute the particles and cough up the thing. Now, if you're wearing a face mask, you come across somebody who's also wearing a face mask, the likelihood of passing the infection across diminishes. But the type of face mask is important. Because virus particles, you know, they're nanometers. And the filters are in microns, micrometers, not nano. So about 1,000 times smaller than some of these masks. So the virus can still pass through the mask. But unfortunately, when you're wearing a mask, you feel secure that there's nothing going on and that you're not likely to get that infection. We have to think about the size of the pore of the mask, and even more importantly, do all the other things. And you never know when you might have touched a surface, because a virus is not just the mask by itself that protects, it's the other little things that you do. Hand washing. I wear an N95 mask. I have access to it. I get one at work every time I have one to use it. But most people don't have access to an N95 mask. So what do? You create your own mask. But I'll say even further, I use Vicks VapoRub. I would suggest Vicks VapoRub in some cutting boards, thick enough so you can pull it out of your nostril, and rub, soak it in that Vicks VapoRub. The menthol on the Vicks VapoRub, the eucalyptus oil on the Vicks VapoRub, neutralizes the virus. So if you put that into your nostrils, but not tiny that it gets lost in the back, thick enough that you can pull it out just with your fingers, rub that on the cutting board, put it in both nostrils. If you can breathe While that's in your nose, great. That's one more layer. So we need to put as many layers of the barriers, and sometimes something that can actually kill the virus. So the mask by itself may not protect to the extent that we expect it to. But it's very useful.
Okay, so I've enjoyed talking with you today about Corona. Anything else that I've forgotten to bring up?
Oh, no. The book. I have a book called Physician Treatment Strategies, and we said that Amazon had blocked that first book. But I think this book, I'm not even going to use Amazon. So the people that download the book, sometime next week they can go back to the website and they'll get information on physician treatment strategies for COVID-19.
Great, great. Well, thank you for all that you're doing and for giving us this information today. And I hope we get a lot of people that listen to your program.
Thank you, Dr. Anderson. It's been a pleasure, as always. And don't forget to send me the book.